Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.
And welcome to Panic with Friends. This is your host, Howard Lindzen. Hey, Howie. How are you?
Hello. Who's this? What's your name again?
This is your producer, Knut. Do you remember?
I fell down and I can't get up.
Did you try to push that button?
We have had a very hard time organizing this because
no,
of
we
me.
Did not. Everything is good.
Well, it's great to hear you, my friend.
Likewise.
I think this may be the first discussion. I want to get right into it because we're talking to Germany, and I think we're using AT&T, so this call may cost $6,000-$7,000.
I charge it to your credit cards. Don't worry about it.
That's why I'm going quickly. Are you done, Canoe? Can I get on with our show?
Yes, please.
This is an international celebrity we have today, pretty much at the very beginning of esports, and especially esports, if not just gaming. You know, I don't like to talk about gaming because, first of all, my game is the stock market. That's not a game, really. It's being called a game because of ROM. But our guest today, Jens Hilger, and I'm sure I just screwed it up for the 10th time, but he'll yell at me, is in Berlin, center of tech in Europe. And he happens to be at the very center of gaming and esports. 1997, Knut.
Wow, that's early.
Yeah, he started gamers.de. He's an investor in Epic Games early. He knows everything about where the puck is going, where it's been, what to use, what's hot, what's not. He has a new $165 million fund. I don't know which fund it is, but we'll catch up. And how COVID accelerated this trend, and what he sees the future. He's predicted it so well. So what a great time to talk to someone as we come out of COVID, hopefully here in the next few months, and people get back to their merry way, how gaming will evolve again. We'll talk about some of the public companies. We'll talk about how he's thinking about the private companies. And then he's also an early investor and made an intro to me to the kids that came up with the ETFs, Roundhill. Really funny All guys right. in on the East Coast who came up with Nerds and Bets, which is ETF for gaming and esports. So we've got it all covered. Let's get him on the phone.
This is Jens.
Hello.
How's it going, Howard?
It's going. You know, I'm 55, so every day is a good day. You are 45, yes?
Yeah, they still feel good for me as well.
I always get upset when someone so young is so successful, not because I'm jealous, just because how did you, you know, I love talking to people who just get shit done. And I don't know if that's a term in Germany, but you've gotten a lot of shit done. Do you remember the first time you like played a game on the internet or a console game? And was it love at first sight?
Yes, very much so. So I started playing video games actively, not as a spectator, I'd say, and at my neighbor's C64. Like, I had a friend who was living next doors. My parents wouldn't want to buy me a personal computer at that point in time. I was like, I don't know, 8, 9 years old. And so I had to play at the neighbor's computer, and that was good fun. But it was like split screen multiplayer, right? Which is when you sort of have a shared screen and kind of two players play at the same screen. Or in sort of a high score competition, which is like you play, the next guy plays, you compare high scores. But really, like, I got fascinated generally for computers and sort of particularly on computer networks and around computer networks. And when sort of I was having my first personal computer then, which was an Amiga computer from Commodore, which I still think was one of the greatest devices ever to be produced, I sort of set up my own mailbox, which was a fun exercise, you know, like you had these dial-in kind of things. And I basically took the telephone line from my parents. So kind of the telephone would ring the entire night. And like my parents were basically getting very disturbed mentally because I was having this thing going. But like in this mailbox, I said that was my first multiplayer game. Like you had these mailboxes where you're dialing in and like you played a game that was basically just text games, you know, but they were multiplayer. And that was really my first true online multiplayer experience. And then later on, as sort of broadband increased a bit and these things got on the internet, Then it was really kind of a game called Quake that I ultimately fell in love with the most and sort of really shaped my perspective on what I wanted to build and that I wanted to build something in gaming and what esports sort of would probably become and that it could become something.
Fantastic. So looking back today, 30 years later, I don't know, 40 years later, what was the thing that you said that made the Commodore so great versus today?
I think like the Amiga computer was just a computer that was allowing you to sort of unfold creativity kind of on a level that was unlike anything I've seen before. Like on the one hand side, it captured me with great video games being available on that computer, but at the same time, lots of creative opportunity available on that computer. That's like sound and music producing capabilities that it had, sort of the graphics capabilities that it had. It was just a creative machine really that also had great video games at it. So that what really made it fascinating for me and allowed me to try all sorts of things. I don't think I'm particularly good at anything on the computer really, but I love to try doing kind of graphics on the computer. I love to just try doing music on the computer and I just try to program. I was never great at any of that, even though I'm a sort of a trained software engineer and I think I have a certificate for software engineering and whatnot, but like I was never great at that. And I was also never really great at playing video games, to be honest. Like in Quake, I never won a tournament. But like, and then maybe it was that sort of turned me into managing stuff and building a company and just finding great people that would really excel at all the things that I was pretty mediocre at. But at the same time, like the mediocrity of that it was everything doing was still allowed me to just do something just all by myself, which was that first website that I created in 1997 called gamers.de, which was just a website that I built entirely myself in my apartment in the night times. And it was just about all my favorite video games. And it looked ugly. Like the articles I posted on that content magazine were not having any higher educational value, but somehow people flocked to that and it became a community and ultimately became something that's called the Gamers Network, which was about 140 pages, like online pages that covered all these great games at the time. Was it Half-Life? Was it Quake? Was it Unreal Tournament? And became a really great community that also featured the first league for professional gamers at that time in Europe, which was called Deutsche Clanliga, German Clan League. And we had kind of, we don't want to call them professional teams. It was really hobbyists and just a group of people that banded together. We called them clans at that time. And they would compete in this league, chat fixed play days, and a prize money of 200 Deutschmark, which is like, I don't know what that translated to in US dollar at the time, maybe $100 or something. And they would get that $100, five people that would play Quake together in that league and sort of win that prize money potentially at the end of the season. And that was sort of when really my fascination for esports and what it could become was really born and inspired.
Well, you're modest. That's fantastic. So I want to go back through your entrepreneurial history, but since people here like to talk about the future and like to make money, let's move quickly to today in the future. Cloud gaming, is that the thing?
I don't think I ever had a strong belief that cloud gaming is somehow going to be a really big thing or kind of turn the games industry upside down. But I want to make sure, like, basically most of gaming now happens in the cloud already, like with sort of particularly server infrastructure being sort of commoditized in services such as AWS, which was very, very different, obviously, 15, 20 years ago and really makes it much easier to produce and operate games these days. But cloud gaming in the sense that sort of the game itself gets rendered in the cloud and you play on a thin client that doesn't need to have any sophisticated graphical rendering capabilities or doesn't have a lot of CPU or GPU power to begin with. Like, I don't think we will see that changing the game's landscape anytime soon. And now it's a bit easy, of course, like people are going to listen to this right now. I'm going to say like, well, it's so easy to say after Stadia, just kind of a shutdown is a hard word, but basically sort of is being shrunk to something that I don't know if one can still call it Stadia then, but we've never made a single investment with Bitcraft with that particular thesis, which might then sort of confirm that we never really believed that this would be a game changer. And I think the primary reason for that is that in the Western world in particular, we just have high-end gaming GPU and CPU in the form of consoles or PCs or high-end mobile devices. at our disposal. And the cloud-based experience is mostly an inferior one still, even with all the latest developments. And inevitably, like the console at your hands, the gaming device and platform in front of you physically will provide a better experience. I think there's not enough motivation for people to switch to a different service at this point.
Got it. And how did Epic come to you? And did you know right away when you saw Epic that it was the next?
Well, that's the one point. You know, like I love to hear us being praised for some things that we might have been doing right on Epic Games, though. Like, we are an investor in Epic Games, but we're sort of number one, we didn't come in early. Number two, we're a minuscule shareholder in this fantastic company. But we invested about, I think it was now a year ago. And even though the company was already at sort of an evaluation that doesn't fit your typical kind of Series A venture capital investor sort of scope anymore, we stepped forward and put money at it and allowed sort of some of our LPs to sort of also participate in this investment with us. And we did it because we're a big believer in what Tim Sweeney and his entire team is building and has built in the past.
And so today you have a $165 million fund, correct?
We have been investing out of that fund. We started investing out of a new fund already.
And so what excites you today? What are you looking for today? Is it the TAM or is it the people? And how do you think about gaming today?
What we see happening right now is something that in Bitcraft we describe with the term synthetic reality. And it's something that we stumbled into with sort of our initial sort of focus on esports. And we recognized that esports somehow was like a reflection of something larger in gaming. And that larger was that the line and sort of the boundary between the physical world and the digital world, the digital reality or simulated reality, is starting to blur. And that's something that esports actually demonstrated in such a fascinating way, because when you sort of watch esports, you watch human beings play, like physical human beings play a virtual kind of simulated character in a virtual simulated reality, that then other people go into a stadium to watch that on a big screen, where that human player that is represented by a virtual avatar is performing but celebrated on stage. Like, it's this esports is this inside and outside of the virtual reality and the video game, where you don't see the line between those two realities anymore. And we believe that that's happening sort of at large around video games, where an increasing amount of the lifetime that we spend, not only entertainment lifetime that we spend in video games, and an increasing number of social interactions that we have takes place in video games and virtual worlds. And lately, you can see a lot of other examples of things that are sort of crossing over in between the two realities, which might be a music concert, which might be sort of a branded fashion item. It might be sort of commerce that all of a sudden takes place in a video game that might have been a website where you had sort of that experience before. Like, it's fascinating how video games not only have become pop culture, but basically is where the street is a bit, right? It's where young people have their hangouts now. And the last year and the COVID crisis has certainly accelerated that a bit, in terms of obviously people chose that place to hang out with their friends simply because the other place was not available. That certainly got a bit more people to kind of spend time in there. But I think for a lot of people, it was a great experience. For the majority of all people, they had a great experience and a great time in video games, and come out of this crisis, of course, being happy that we finally have some freedom again. So do I. But those experiences and those times and those relationships built in video games for new video games players last year and partly this year will bring forward a huge wave of kind of video game enthusiasts and fans and players as part of what we come out of this crisis with.
It's great. Thank you. The thing that blows me away about gaming versus the stock market, and I know you've crossed over and look at the markets too, is there's so many different platforms. And so it's so confusing to me. What do I invest in? Where do I start? Is it Activision? Is it Take-Two? Is it Xbox? Is it Nintendo? Is it Tencent? Is it cloud? I just never was into it. And I think these gamers have a huge edge. And it's so funny. The culture of gaming was like, oh, people should encourage our kids to play games because that makes them great in the world. And then in my world, it's like, God forbid someone should learn how to invest or trade a stock. Meanwhile, that could be the future. You've kind of now crossed over in backing an ETF company as a seed stage company. Are they connected? Is gaming and markets connected?
Let me give you a quick rundown on our thesis behind the investment in the great founders of Roundhill. Like, particularly initially when we had a large focus on sort of the esports space, I really was looking for every opportunity how I could play esports and sort of place bets into things that are relating to esports. And the question that I got asked quite often from investors that called me, like, Jens, tell me something about the esports space, like, how should I play it? And I told them, like, listen, you can invest in sort of private companies as I do with Bitcraft directly, if that's your appetite and you think you sort of can handle individual private company investments, go ahead. Like, you can invest alongside us, or you sort of could take an LP position in a games fund. But you could also look at the public markets. There is games stocks, like there are stocks in the public markets that have a fairly high esports exposure. Now, 4 or 5 years ago, there was not that many sort of, I want to say, pure play esports stock as there is potentially today. But there was a list of stock that I put my money in myself and I was giving these recommendations. And I was thinking, like, well, you give all these recommendations, like, can't there just be like an ETF for this so you had an easier time? And shouldn't you be the one that kind of offers this ETF because you have all these LPs? Like, I mean, that's probably useful for them. You get investors interested, sort of you could put a brand name on it. And I was thinking, like, how do I do this ETF thing? But then I had a lot to do with my private investments, obviously, with Bitcraft. And like researching how to launch an ETF was not really on my kind of list of capabilities and resources. But I bumped into the team from Roundhill, Tim and Will, about a year later, while I had nearly forgotten about my ETF enthusiasm and excitement. And they pitched me that they wanted to build an esports ETF. And I was like, okay, finally, here we are. Like that's like my thesis kind of comes right to me. And the guys were awesome. But when I discussed the opportunity with them, and that was the NERD ticker symbol, esports ETF, it opened my eyes for something more. And that's that, and that was about, and when we invested in January 2019, and sort of the discussions happened like Q3, Q4 2018. And what struck me as well is like, there's a whole wave of new retail investors growing up, empowered by like these new fintech kind of startups and Robin Hood. And what will particularly young and upcoming financial investors put their money in? Well, I think just like everybody should do when he starts to invest in stock, invest in something you understand and believe in yourself. Like invest in something that is around you and you just know that the product or the service you use from this company is superior to anything else. And you have a good look of what's happening next with that company. And for many young people, that's a Tesla, that's an Apple, that's might be Activision Blizzard, that might be games from Ubisoft, because they're users of all these products, right? So if you look at that kind of next generation, that sort of digitally native generation that grows up and uses Robinhood first, like what products do they use and surround themselves with and believe in for the future? Well, that was some of the names, right? And esports sits center in that because a lot of these are esports enthusiasts. So it was really a bet on two things. It was a bet like, hey, there's a product in like missing an ETF in that space in general, and somebody should do it. The other was, well, you can actually start designing ETFs that are tailored to a new generation of like retail investors and speak to them directly and market it in a way that is actually appealing to this generation and is resonating with them. And I think these two parts of the thesis came together in Roundhill, and the way that these guys have executed and built this up over time is just nothing short of incredible. But I guess that's the answer to your question. Does that make sense?
It's a fantastic answer. So it was just more going deeper on your domain experience, which is kind of what I do, it's probably why we get along, is that we just keep going deeper and worlds start colliding the deeper you go. You would think it's the opposite. You think you got to go horizontal, but yet the deeper you go, the more horizontal opportunities can come. So let me switch to horizontal platforms, because that's my confusion in this. And that's why I own Nerd. I own the two ETFs. I'm friends with the guys. It just makes sense to me. I can't pick a gaming stock, just like I can't pick a biotech stock. And as anti-index as I am, I'm very pro getting access to unique things that I'm not passionate about, but I know are growth industries like gaming with the Nerd. So kudos on that one. Very hard business. They're more of a marketing company, but kudos to you for like diving deep and understanding the horizontal opportunities from being a domain expert. So let me go hop to horizontal platforms, which throws me off and what makes me just an ETF investor in this space. How do you manage all that? And how do you think about horizontal tech platforms?
So when you say horizontal tech platforms, then you refer again to like console space, mobile space, PC-based gaming. Is that what you consider with those platforms?
Yes, sir. Yes.
The beauty is that each of these three big gaming platforms are growing at significant rates still. And particularly the PC and the console platform had been kind of written off so often already. Like PC gaming is going to die. That's going to be the last console generation. And none of it all ever turned out to become reality. Each of the platforms is thriving, and that's mobile. So touch-based gaming on sort of smartphones and tablets, that's the console platform with platforms such as the Nintendo Switch or the PlayStation 5, now, which was the best-selling ever by far, and the new Xbox. And then you have your PC platform and gaming laptops that are getting at ever better price points with ever better experience. So that's the beauty. All of these platforms are growing. And the interesting part is that there's an increasing amount of games that span all of these platforms at the same time. Like I think that the title that broke through with this is probably Fortnite, which is a game that you play on any of these platforms, really. And you can play together with other people on another platform. It doesn't matter. It's the same game. And
got it.
That's just something super fascinating, right? But like, if you look at games companies and stock now out there, there's quite a lot of companies that cater to several of these platforms at the same time. And then there's some which just focus on one of them, but there's plenty of opportunity to be had on all of them.
So what excites you today? You're a seed investor, I would say, or is it A rounds?
We invest seed, Series A, and now in the meantime, also a bit in the later stages, which means we're probably deploying between 2 million, like 1.5 to 2 million, up to 10 million US dollars in initial investments in private companies in our space. And we invest in games IP and studios, which we hope to be the next Fortnite in one of these great companies that we finance. We invest in technology. One fascinating investment that we just did is an investment in a company that deals with volumetric video, which is a kind of very fascinating sort of step function change in visual experience where we capture video truly three-dimensional. It has massive implications in the games industry and in sort of motion picture as well as in e-commerce. So we invest in technologies that accelerate and improve the experience in games for the players, and to some extent for the companies that are sort of providing these games with infrastructure and SaaS solutions. And we invest in platforms for gamers as well, which might be sort of platforms where you can build your own game experience. We just invest in a platform that actually prevents toxicity in gaming, which is sort of quite a significant issue that, like, when you come together with other gamers in a game, you play a game session, and then more often than not, one of the players will freak out a bit because something happened and he's unhappy with that. And he's starting to like show a bit of kind of nasty behavior towards other players, which is destroying the game for other people, right? That's at the end of the day, we're talking about digital citizenship here. It's like, well, like in a digital society, equally like in the real one out there, there's certain rules that you should follow and be nice with people. And sort of we're looking at that and invested in a platform that helps sort of get players to show better behavior in games, which is a big challenge for games companies. So that's kind of the range of kind of different things that we invest in, these different buckets that I just gave some examples for.
Wow, cool. I just think they're very connected to the stock market, because StockTwits, our community, deals with that too. We have our house rules. One of my big complaints about Twitter is they never invested in this product idea that you just invested in, which is digital citizenship, which ended up with President Trump. Somehow our lack of couth digitally manifested itself in this behavior online. So what would they do? Is it a software product or is it education? What is it?
Well, in the first place, it's like trying to understand who's showing such behavior. And once identified, the question is, why is he showing that behavior? And then the answer is mostly not to say, well, we're going to penalize you for showing such behavior, but giving somebody a motivation to change his behavior. So put in front of the people that you identified to have shown problematic behavior, put in front of them a reward scheme or a motivation that helps them to overcome this behavior and change it in a positive way. So it's really a bit like education, if you want.
Okay, I'm very interested in learning more about that. I'll hit you up. What about, what parts of the world are both the focus and where do you think the big markets are? Obviously, gaming's global, but where are you seeing the coolest stuff come out? Is it India, China, US, Europe?
We are focused on the Western markets. Our team is entirely distributed, and we're about 7 investment professionals in Bitcraft and a team of about 11 people right now in total. And we're distributed in Europe and in the United States. And our investments focus mostly on these markets, on Europe and North America. We did invest in Asia as well. We invested in Japan, in the Philippines, in Singapore, in India. The market that currently fascinates us the most and are, let's say, also the most accessible to us in terms of investing in, which sort of China is just a market that's difficult to access with private investments from a European or US soil, if you want so. But the markets that fascinate us are Southeast Asia and India. There's a very large and affluent audience growing up that has a very high fascination for kind of video games and the culture around video games. And sort of that's markets that we're looking closely at. However, not having boots on the ground, not having a partner in that space, we are careful with investments and typically partner with other local investors on deals we do there. And in the Western markets, we have our portfolio, like, I think the US is like 60-65% of our portfolio, Europe like 25% probably. And The West Coast in the US is, when it comes to games IP and sort of game studios, is having a tremendous depth of the talent pool, which is particularly companies such as Riot Games, Activision Blizzard, that sort of have talent that at some point in time decides, well, let's go build something ourselves. And that's a deep and great pool of game development experience that we can tap into. Platforms, teams that build technology, we find in all sorts of places that we would also typically find great tech investments in. But in terms of consumer, like, I think that the most interesting line to draw probably is that emerging markets in tendency are more mobile focused and also lead the charge in terms of what you would call mobile esports, which in the Western world, also based on the fact that we described earlier about, like, in the Western world, like, a high-end gaming device at home is sort of ubiquitous. And so in the Western world, like, mobile gaming is around and large, but there's still a different platform, namely the console or the PC, that drives high-end gaming, which is a bit different in a market like Brazil or India or the Philippines, where the mobile device, your touch device, is your gaming device. And PC and console play a much smaller role. And the young audience grows up playing esports games, competitive multiplayer gaming on their smartphones.
Is there a go-to? Obviously, you might put out content. Where, if someone's just interested, obviously, I totally recommend the Roundhill guys. Jan Bonak has a esports ETF as well, so people can hit us up. Where do people get started? What if they really want to feel like they can fast follow you. Is there one or two websites or Substacks or emails that people could read a week or a day that keeps them really into gaming? Because you must read all day.
So what we have our social channels, which are Twitter, Bitcraft VC, as well as our LinkedIn. On both of them, we are fairly active. We do have our website where we actually are about to publish a bit more content. Other than that, our close partners at Navik, which have a newsletter that's called Master the Meta. You find them under the same URL, masterthemeta.com. That's just an amazing newsletter for in-depth information, kind of freely accessible for anybody, that I would always recommend to subscribe to see and hear the latest trends. So I think that's probably the best. Like, follow our investment activities. And at any time, there's ideas, great startups, just reach out directly.
Okay, well, this is fantastic. I'm going to let you go. It's late. I learned a pile, and we will refer everybody to Bitcraft on Twitter, and I'll start sharing some of your content. I appreciate you taking the time to get me just up to speed on this space. Obviously, you know, a connected world is just great for a gaming world. So are your kids into this?
Yeah. Contrary to common belief, I actually had my kids not get in front of any sort of digital device or screen for the first 5 years of their life. But now the dam's been broken, and it broke into a game called Minecraft that obviously everybody has heard about. I have played that game like starting 2011, 2012 a bit. But now with my kids, I'm playing Minecraft and I'm having a blast. We all have iPads at home, so like we play, and the three of us each on an iPad, and we are all on the same server, and then we go adventure, and then we go find the pirate boat and build a hut together, and like go into the desert and find a treasure. And it's just like that time with my kids and the experience and the adventure they take out of this, the education they get out of this, I'm blown away. And like you see, I'm 45, and I'm a bit concerned that I lose touch with the audience that I'm basically investing in products that they, I believe, consume. And I always considered myself one of the earliest kind of geeks and nerds out there in this esports space. But like, I'm 45, and it's probably not working that well anymore, I think, for myself. But my kids are now getting to the age where the last 5 years was a bit hard, but now is like hard in the sense that I didn't have kids to look over their shoulder to gain an advantage from, you know what I mean? But now, like, they're getting like 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, and I see how I now get basically weaponized with new knowledge by following them on a daily basis. So from an investment perspective, the age that my kids get in right now, fantastic for me.
Well, good for you. I'm the same way with, unfortunately, with investing with Robinhood, which we were investors in. You have to wait till your kids are 18. but maybe crypto changes that and just becomes the crossover investing world for kids, like Minecraft and Roblox are for parents and kids. Well, congratulations, my man. I'm so lucky to have met you and just kind of follow along here, and I'll refer people to the Bitcraft stuff, and hopefully we can get you back. I definitely had to get up to speed, and you've got such a long history in this space, so it's kind of staggering. And I appreciate your insights. Good luck in the next few months.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Talk soon. K-Nut.
Hey.
Two non-gamers.
Yeah.
So hard, because I never played a game, so I didn't know, you know, I had all these questions, but I just selfishly just wanted to hear how he thinks about the world.
Yeah, I never got into it much either, but my kids are way into it.
Yeah, I never played Minecraft. All right, everybody. Thanks, Knut. I'm going to let everybody get back to their day. This is Panic with Friends. You are listening to Knut and Howard. That was all about gaming. I will share links to this episode on my blog and on the podcast links, Bitcraft Ventures. Like I said, this world, you know, I you have to follow the leader. You can't be an expert in everything, but we can talk to experts and see how they think about the world. So I learned a lot today. Like I said, go to Spotify or Google, Apple Podcasts, search my name, Howard Lindzen, or Panic with Friends. Subscribe one a week. We talk to investors, traders, entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, try and get a little bit in front of the world and catch everybody up in one podcast at a time. Thanks, Knut. We'll see everybody soon.